The views and opinions expressed on the following program are those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent those of any organization, including One Generation Away.
The freedom of a people to choose its leaders is the root of liberty.
Keep alive this experiment in liberty.
Liberty, in case you've forgotten, is the soul's right to breathe.
Government should be very minimal in protecting liberty.
Peace cannot be purchased at the cost of liberty.
The sturdy ground of liberty.
Liberty once lost is lost forever.
Fight for their liberty and for our security.
Guarantees individual liberty.
This great republic born alone in liberty.
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 Liberty. Just how much do you want liberty?
This is Liberty Nation with Tim Donner. Cutting through the double talk, taking on the topics, going after what the politicians really mean, and making it all clear. For your freedom and your liberty. Liberty Nation with Tim Donner.
What does Roy Moore's defeat in Alabama mean for the Republican Party? And what does Doug Jones' stunning victory mean for the Democrats? Is it a portent of things to come in 2018? Welcome back in to Liberty Nation, and we will examine the meaning in both the short view and the long view of the Alabama Senate race won by a Democrat, or perhaps it should be said, lost by a Republican after multiple allegations of sexual misconduct with minors. I'll tell you what it all means going forward and whether it was a bad thing or a good thing that Moore lost. Police brutality re-entered the spotlight this week with a shocking verdict and an even more shocking video released after the verdict of a cop humiliating, threatening, and then gunning down an unarmed suspect. We'll bring in Jeff Charles of LibertyNation.com to talk it over. In Say What, Donald Trump goes to war with a backbench Democrat senator. And a former vice president of Facebook decries the rise of social media that he helped to create. Plus more gems from the left about who else? President Trump. And we'll talk liberty with constitutional lawyer and LibertyNation.com legal correspondent Scott Cosenza. So, there is an understandable rush to judgment about the meaning of the Alabama Senate race on Tuesday. It raises so many questions about both parties and the direction of the country. Is this defeat of GOP standard-bearer Roy Moore as significant as the left believes or hopes it to be? Is Democrat Doug Jones' victory as shocking at the state level as Trump's was at the national level a harbinger of bad times ahead for the GOP? Does it represent the leading edge of a comeback by Democrats? And what does this say about Donald Trump? Well, what say we slow down, take a step back, and put this thing in perspective? In this age of instant punditry, a longer view is certainly in order. Now, sure, this may be the start or the early stages of a Democratic comeback against a president with famously low approval ratings. We can hardly draw that conclusion based on this one race, but it was in the reddest of red states. And when you add it to their unexpectedly large victory in the Virginia governor's race and a landslide win in the New Jersey gubernatorial contest, there is now an undeniable sense of momentum on the left. But it's also true that the party which wins a presidential election almost always loses seats in the next midterm elections, or in this case, special congressional and gubernatorial elections. It happened to Obama in 2009 when Virginia and New Jersey went for GOP governors. And it's happening now to Trump and the Republicans. What remains to be seen is whether the 468 House and Senate seats up for election in 2018 will continue the trend. It did for Democrats in 2010 when they were, as Barack Obama famously said, shellacked. In the end, the outcome may well hinge on whether the GOP tax reform bill, likely soon to become law, has the promised effect on an economy already experiencing higher growth, over 3% in the last two quarters, and lower unemployment, more than 2 million jobs added this year. The race in Alabama turned not on ideology, but on Roy Moore as Exhibit A of the issue of the year, sexual misconduct. There's little doubt, perhaps no doubt, that Moore would have won this election, but for the nine, count them, nine allegations of inappropriate conduct with teenagers, which came pouring in after Moore won the Republican primary. Now, Roy Moore was hardly a typical Republican candidate. He was opposed by both the Democrats and the entire Republican establishment. And despite multiple statewide victories over the years, Moore's always underperformed in comparison with most GOP candidates in Alabama. I mean, Trump won that bright red state by 30 points. Judge Moore may just have exemplified the Peter Principle, a national race proving to be his level of incompetence. So Republicans now hold 51 seats in the Senate instead of 52, but Doug Jones will not take office until after the landmark tax reform bill is signed and sealed, unless the GOP, of course, fumbles the ball near the goal line. And while the GOP would obviously prefer the extra vote when the calendar turns, considering their already narrow 52-48 advantage, there are precious few major items on the legislative docket in 2018 outside of more attempts to fix the metastasizing Obamacare mess. And with next year's election certain to change the Senate alignment, the upper chamber is going to look very different one way or another after the voters have gone to the polls, which is less than 11 months from now. Now, it could be that in the end, tax reform will be to Republicans what Obamacare was to Democrats, the one big thing they were able to accomplish when they were handed full control of the federal government. But it could also be that successful results from the first restructuring of the nation's tax laws in over three decades would, unlike Obamacare for the Democrats, be enough for Republicans to retain power. But consider most of all the baggage that Republicans have shed with Moore's defeat. There will not be the promised and immediate ethics investigation into a newly elected senator. There will not be an opportunity for Democrats to smear the GOP as the party of pedophiles. There will not be an opportunity for the bloodthirsty left to tie Moore and Trump together in a nice, neat twofer package. Rest assured that while the Steve Bannon wing of the GOP is disappointed, the bulk of Republican office holders and candidates and professionals are breathing a sigh of relief at Moore's defeat. Now, it's also important to note that with no other races in play this month, Democrats were able to focus like a laser beam on this single race, pouring in the lion's share of the more than $40 million spent in this campaign. Much of it was from out of state. As Democrats succeeded in nationalizing this race, unlike the recent special House election for a swing seat in Georgia won by a Republican. Next year, with 33 Senate seats in play, it's unlikely they'll be able to target any Senate race as heavily as they did this race in Alabama. And of those 33 seats in play next year, the Democrats must defend 23 of them, which makes wresting control of the upper chamber a Herculean task for a party, the Democrats, that's at least as unpopular as the Republicans. And the Democrats will need to flip 24 seats to seize control of the House. Now, this is a daunting challenge for a party still shell-shocked by their stunning defeat in 2016 and which has yet to really regain its ideological bearings. But a much larger turnover than that happened as recently as 2010, when the Republicans flipped a whopping 63 House seats. So the task for Democrats is likely not as difficult in the House as in the Senate. And rest assured, that it's almost certain that if the Democrats do take control of that lower chamber, the House, one of their first acts will be to introduce articles of impeachment against President Trump. Anyway, Trump didn't get his man in Alabama. Mitch McConnell and his establishment colleagues believe they dodged a bullet with Moore's defeat, but they still view Trump as some sort of alien force. And the left smells blood in the water. So buckle your seatbelts, folks. The post-2016 political drama is just getting started. Police brutality comes front and center again after a shocking incident and shocking verdict in Arizona. We step away for a moment and then welcome in Jeff Charles of LibertyNation.com, who says it's time for conservatives to step up and speak out about police violence.
Liberty Nation with Tim Donner.
What we have heard here today has been a political spectacle.
We elect these guys to run the country. They're just not doing their job.
This is Liberty Nation with Tim Donner.
Well, one of the most disheartening of all the disheartening things we're witnessing in today's bitterly divided, toxic waste dump of a political environment is all sides going to their respective corners and trying to corner the market on a bunch of issues by automatically labeling the other side as evil because they disagree. We see that constantly from the left, where the very fact that Donald Trump supports something, they must by right violently oppose it. Where the label racist or white supremacist gets tossed around liberally. Where fabricated stories like the one from ABC claiming Trump had ordered contact with the Russians before the election, or the one from CNN claiming Donald Trump Jr. got the WikiLeaks emails before they went public. These have become disturbingly frequent. But a shadow of the same problem exists on the right, where conservatives feel compelled to turn the tables by demonizing the left in all instances. But what happens if an issue like police brutality, supposedly owned by the left, is displayed on video for all to see? Are people on the right going to just automatically support the cop? Well, we bore witness to an egregious incident of police violence in recent days following the exoneration of a cop facing a second-degree murder charge. A video was released of the entire event, and it is brutal. It's infuriating. It shows a cop at a hotel in Arizona forcing an unarmed man to his knees, humiliating him, and then gunning him down with a hail of bullets. The cop was acquitted of all charges. Joining us to discuss this highly disturbing story is the man who wrote about it on LibertyNation.com this week with a story with a headline, "Conservatives Should Speak Out Against Police Brutality." It's Jeff Charles. Hello, Jeff. Merry Christmas.
Hi, Tim. Merry Christmas to you, too. Thanks for having me on.
Well, my pleasure, and we appreciate it. Now, I have seen police misconduct and violence before, but this incident was striking. Please walk us through what actually happened.
Basically, the police were called to an Arizona hotel. They had a report of somebody waving a rifle out of a window. And so the police got there. There were six of them, and they got into the hallway. And the suspect, his last name was Shaver, and he was in a hotel room with a woman. He was a traveling pest control worker, and he was staying at this hotel. Apparently, earlier in the day, he had showed his pellet rifle that he uses when he's doing his pest control to some other people in the hotel. We don't know if there was anybody actually pointing a rifle out of a window, but apparently somebody thought that they saw that. So the police arrive, they get into the hallway, and there are already on heightened alert because they had a report of a firearm. They ordered the woman out of the room and the man as well. And they managed to get the woman, they managed to apprehend her peacefully without much of a struggle. But when it came to the man, he had been drinking, so he was intoxicated, and they gave him a battery of different instructions, sometimes contradictory instructions. There were between 5 and 10 different instructions that the police gave him. One was to get on your knees, lie on your stomach, put your hands out, put your hands over your head. At one point, they asked him to get back on his knees and to cross his left foot over his right foot. Then they asked him to crawl. Now, all throughout these, they're issuing threats. They tell him that there's a good chance that he'll get shot if he makes the wrong move. So he's terrified. He's sobbing. And of course, it's hard to follow those instructions even when you're sober, I would imagine.
He threatened, that cop threatened to shoot this unarmed man on at least 3 occasions during the 4.5-minute video.
That's correct. He brought up shooting him at least 3 times during the incident. And of course, that's going to put the man in a state of terror. And so at one point, I mean, when he first had his hands up, he kind of let him drift down. And the cop says, if you do that again, we're going to shoot you. Over like the course of 5 minutes, there were plenty of opportunities for them to just cuff the guy and take him wherever they needed to take him. There were 6 officers there. At the last point, they have the guy start to crawl to them. They order him to crawl towards the police officers, which is something I've never heard of. Maybe it's something that police do. I haven't heard or seen that.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't either.
Yeah, normally they're standing up or they're on the ground. They're lying prone. The officer comes and cuffs him. In this case, they ask him to crawl over. So he begins to crawl, and he was wearing baggy basketball shorts, and they begin to fall down. He reaches towards his waistband to pull them up, and Officer Brailsford shot him 5 times with his AR-15.
As he moved his hand ever so slightly, and the defense argued successfully in the trial that could have been construed as a move towards a gun in a holster by a guy who's been humiliated and threatened and told to get on his knees and then made to crawl like a dog while he's still being threatened, that a slight twitch of his right hand would be enough to force the cop to unload his chamber.
Yes, that's true. And the thing is, I mean, I know cops are tight, and they have a dangerous job. I'm not downplaying
neither am I. And I'm saying that in many instances we will support the police. But your point is that in an egregious instance like this, we lose credibility. Those of us who are on the right of center lose our credibility if we explain away or serve as apologists for this kind of egregious, not just police brutality, but violence.
That's exactly right, especially since they never even needed to get to the point to where he was shot. They could have cuffed him tons of times during that interaction. And there is a knee-jerk reaction on the side of the left to always blame the cop. But likewise, there's also a knee-jerk reaction on the right to just say, nope, the cop acted in the way that he should have. The truth is somewhere in the middle. It should be a case-by-case basis. There are instances where cops are unfairly demonized. This is not one of those situations. In this instance, the police clearly overstepped their bounds, and they acted in a way that took this man's life when it wasn't necessary.
Thanks for casting some light on this, and thanks most of all for bringing it to light on LibertyNation.com this week, Jeff.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me on to talk about it.
Jeff Charles, race relations and media affairs correspondent for LibertyNation.com. Go get our app, LN News and Commentary. It's available in the Apple Store or Google Play Store. That's LN News and Commentary. Quick break, and then we're back with Say What? Donald Trump goes to war with a backbench Democrat senator. And a former president of Facebook decries the rise of social media he helped to create.
Liberty Nation with Tim Donner. This is Liberty Nation with Tim Donner.
Say what? Say what? Say what? One more time.
Say What, the portion of Liberty Nation where we unveil some of the most wacky, astonishing, and damnable things uttered by politicians and, of course, the chattering class. So this president, who lets no insult go unanswered, punched below his weight class again this week, getting into a feud with a backbench leftist senator known for almost nothing until the last few weeks. But first, Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, who was backed by the Clintons to take Hillary's Senate seat in New York after Hillary became Secretary of State, who owes her entire political career to the Clintons, said that Bill Clinton should have resigned. Now that it's safe to say that, because the Clintons have been defrocked. And this week, Gillibrand decided to grab the spotlight again after several of the same women who accused Donald Trump of sexual misconduct during the presidential campaign were trotted out again by the Democrat Party. So the ever-courageous Senator Gillibrand decided on another typical move made by front-running, headline-seeking politicians like her.
President Trump should resign. These allegations are credible. They are numerous. I've heard these women's testimony, and many of them are heartbreaking. And President Trump should resign his position. Congress should have hearings. They should do their investigation. They should have appropriate investigations of his behavior and hold him accountable.
Right. Signal your own enormous virtue by calling for something you know will never happen. What courage, what fortitude, what strength? Well, the president, as is his wont, did not let that one stand. He took to Twitter and wrote, "Lightweight Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, a total flunky for Chuck Schumer, and someone who would come to my office begging for campaign contributions not so long ago and would do anything for them, is now in the ring fighting against Trump. Very disloyal to Bill and crooked." And then, in all caps, "used!" exclamation point. Of course, leftists, as is their wont, went absolutely berserk over the part where it said Gillibrand would do anything for contribution, simply assuming it somehow meant Senator Gillibrand would offer up sexual favors in return for funding. Witness a woman who's also been the target of nasty Trump tweets in the past, MSNBC's Mika Brzezinski.
"That is reprehensible, that the president of the United States would say something so derogatory and disgusting about a woman. We're not surprised, Mr. President. You do it all the time. You treat women terribly, and you treat the women around you even worse. And you treat women like punching bags because it's fun for you, because you are intimidated by women. That's your problem."
Well, actually, it's your problem, Mika. You see, he writes these tweets just so he can provoke that kind of reaction from people like you. And you just fall for it every time. As the president would say, sad. And while we're on the subject of nasty leftists, we present the man who is single-handedly destroying late-night TV by turning it from fun into constant extended lectures about his own personal left-wing political views. And if that wasn't bad enough, he used his own son as a political prop again. Jimmy Kimmel bringing his infant son on stage with him and tearfully describing the two open-heart surgeries he's had, and then trashing Republicans for defunding the Children's Health Insurance Program.
"Congress, about 72 days ago, failed to approve funding for CHIP while they work on getting tax cuts for their millionaire and billionaire donors. And imagine getting that letter, literally not knowing how you'll be able to afford to save your child's life. This is not a hypothetical. About 2 million CHIP kids have serious chronic conditions. I don't know about you. I've had enough of this. I don't know what could be more disgusting than putting a tax cut that mostly goes to rich people ahead of the lives of children."
Yes, it's all about the children. Remember the good old days when you would actually tune into The Tonight Show or David Letterman or whatever to escape and have a little amusement and fun at the end of the day? Well, Jimmy Kimmel is making sure that won't continue. And by the way, is there any place left where we can escape left-wing politics? Late-night TV, the movies, the NFL?
Apparently not. Meanwhile, Roy Moore's loss in the Senate race in Alabama has establishment Republicans calling for something not far short of a public hanging of Steve Bannon, former Trump advisor, who I like to call Trumpist in chief. He campaigned heavily for Judge Moore and has vowed to campaign against almost every other establishment Republican in the Senate next year. And Congressman Peter King of New York says Bannon should be banished.
This guy does not belong on the national stage. He looks like some disheveled drunk that wandered onto the political stage. He does not represent anything that I stand for. I consider myself a conservative Republican. I consider myself an Irish Catholic. And he sort of parades himself out there with his weird alt-right views that he has. And to me, it's demeaning the whole governmental and political process.
Well, you see, Bannon, like Trump, is like some sort of space alien to these politicians used to the way business has been done in Washington for decades. They simply cannot understand or accept the populist, nationalist, scorched earth style Trump brought to the national political scene. And you know what? They never will. But we've saved the best say what for last. Myself and so many others have decried the ever-growing influence of social media, what it has done to the nation's fabric and the way we speak to and shout at each other under the veil of cyber protection. Lives have been altered, ruined even, by people being outed, falsely accused, constantly flamed. And recognition of all this came from a most unlikely source this week, a former high-ranking vice president of Facebook, Chamath Palihapitiya, telling students at Stanford Business School that he has deep post-mortem regret about what social media in general and Facebook in particular has wrought.
I feel tremendous guilt. I think we all knew in the back of our minds, even though we feigned this whole line of like there probably aren't any really bad unintended consequences, we kind of knew something bad could happen. But I think the way we defined it was not like this. It literally is a point now where I think we have created tools that are ripping apart the social fabric of how society works. And I would encourage all of you as the future leaders of the world to really internalize how important this is. If you feed the beast, that beast will destroy you.
Ripping apart the social fabric of how society works. If you feed it, that social media beast will destroy you. This from a man who helped create the beast. I guess the question now is whether it's already too late, perhaps way too late, to reverse the process in any significant way. The only way is for each of you individually to do about social media what Nancy Reagan once said about using drugs. Just say no. Quick break and then back to Talk Liberty with LibertyNation.com legal correspondent Scott Cosenza.
Liberty Nation with Tim Donner.
And now it is time. Once again, it is time to welcome in our regular contributor, constitutional lawyer and LibertyNation.com legal correspondent Scott Cosenza, to discuss what's going on with issues affecting your liberty. Hello, Scott.
Hello, Tim.
All right. This Mueller probe, the special counsel who was hired to find a crime rather than to investigate an alleged one.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, Tim. Let me stop you right there. The crime was Hillary Clinton is not the president
yes.
of the United
God,
States.
I keep forgetting
that's
that one.
Crime
that's the crime.
That must be
to investigate
at all costs.
The crime of Trump getting elected.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks.
That's where we are. In
you know
America.
What? We look to you for clarity, and yeah. you've just provided that.
And we all have to pay for that crime, Tim.
Oh, that's too good. the tentacles of that investigation have reached far and wide, as mm-hmm. we all knew they would when a special counsel is given basically unlimited portfolio
yes.
to investigate anybody, anything that has any kind of tangential relation to the Trump campaign, to the Russian government, to the so-called cyber propaganda that was advanced by the Russians, etc. Mm-hmm. But because this is such a far-reaching investigation, it now may be possible, and it should be likely, that he will look into crime, so to speak, from the other side, from the Obama and Clinton people. And the fact now that Peter Stroke, who was one of the agents assigned to the special counsel's team to investigate all this, mm-hmm. it's clearly been revealed, unmasked, as an extreme Hillary Clinton partisan. And now a conservative group is suing the FBI for records on that agent Strzok, who was dismissed from the Mueller probe.
Tim, Tom Fitton's Judicial Watch, again doing the Lord's work here.
What would we do without them? What would we do without them?
I'm tempted to send them another donation.
I agree.
Which is a confession that I have, in fact, donated to them
in
the past.
Okay.
They are... The truth is that the FBI has never done, and we cannot expect it to, investigate itself or actors that are high up in it. All organizations are loathe for honest self-assessment, especially when that honest self-assessment might come at a steep, steep price, which I think would be the case here. So then we have to have independent channels to do so. One of those independent channels is the judiciary enforcing FOIA acts to at least expose what's gone on. And that is what the great service that Tom Fitton and Judicial Watch are doing here. That person and his girlfriend, I guess, or whoever the woman
yes.
that he...
The person in the FBI with whom he was having an illicit
right.
affair.
And apparently yes. planning an insurance policy against the Trump presidency. There's plenty of evidence to suggest that multiple federal crimes were committed by Mrs. Clinton, by whom I by the whole setup of the homebrew server and the attempt to avoid disclosure. And absent a competently placed authority willing to investigate those crimes, certainly they'll never see the light. Now, will Mueller look at them? It seems like the whole thing, Tim, to the extent that it's been revealed, has been a rigged process against Donald Trump and in favor of turning a deliberate blind eye, when the law calls willful blindness, to the mm-hmm. Actions of Mrs. Clinton. So I'm in favor, certainly, of her misdeeds being brought to light, and also an exposure of the FBI, which, if we remember correctly, for the duration of its existence, it's not new that the FBI has been politicized.
True.
And one of the things that, in fact, the left has, in generations gone past, railed against the FBI, and conservatives were kind of bolstered it. But now we're seeing a little bit of the flip of the coin here.
Well, the FBI has, let's face it, they've been all but totally disgraced. They were working in conjunction with Obama's Department of Justice and the administration and the Hillary Clinton campaign
yes.
to assure that Trump would not be elected.
Well, when we read about the unmasking and when we read about the perjury traps, as an attorney, a perjury trap is just, it's
right.
we've heard, the process crime.
Process crime.
Okay, so there's
right.
no underlying crime, and they shouldn't be undertaken, and they shouldn't certainly be undertaken for political purposes.
Well, the whole idea...
seems to be what happened here.
The whole idea of an investigation to uncover collusion, quote-unquote, leads most Americans to believe that there's some law against collusion,
right.
but it's a political crime.
Right.
It is not a
yeah.
crime,
there's
under,
no crime
under
there,
the law.
Just so in case anybody's confused by that. There is no actual crime called collusion
exactly.
that Donald Trump could have engaged
but
in.
But there is a political crime.
I'm reminded, Tim, of the movie The Man with One Red Shoe, if you're not familiar with that.
Don't remember it.
It's an oldie but a goodie, and it is a farcical comedy that describes a power play move between FBI and CIA in this country. And it seems like if that's not happening, there are certainly, the idea that there's a deep state war going on started off, I think, as sort of a lunatic fringe idea. And the more and more we see, it seems like that's where that's what the obvious answer to what's happening is.
Well, going back to the FBI for just a second before we leave this subject, I was thinking about this earlier this week, and what you said that the FBI has always been under a shadow of
Hoover and before.
From Hoover forward. I think the thing that elevated the FBI into a point of public support and approval was the old TV show, The FBI,
certainly,
with Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. That sort of cleansed them and made them look like
they
were.
All of their movie and TV, they did great work in establishing through those cultural sort of outreaches that they were the sine qua non of law enforcement professionalism, which is all bunk, and it was all show and all Hollywood. They never were.
Sine qua non. I'm just overwhelmingly impressed by that.
Thank you, Tim. All right,
but we could spend a whole time on this, but let's go on to net neutrality, because you've written a really good piece on LibertyNation.com. Net neutrality, for years, the first 20 years or so of the Internet, there was really no regulation. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, in 2015, the Obama administration, or the FCC under Barack Obama, passed what they call net neutrality laws. And now, by the same 3-2 margin with Trump, mm-hmm. and the FCC has reversed that. Tell us about it.
I'll talk about this in its most sort of practical rubber meets the road domestic residential Internet connective standard, okay? And that is that you go home, you want to turn on your TV, and you want to watch House of Cards on Netflix, okay? And you're disappointed because it's too slow, it doesn't load right, or whatever. And Netflix says, we're having issues with Comcast or Verizon mm-hmm. or your ISP
right.
because they're not cooperating with us in terms of getting you the fast speeds. And Verizon says, yeah, that's right, we don't care about Netflix particularly, or Comcast says, hey, we've got this Hulu product that we're interested in selling you, so please look at that instead. And people freak out, and they say, I want my internet preferences to not be metered or even kind of validated or not by my ISP. Net neutrality provided one measure against that, which was that Internet service providers, or ISPs, could not discriminate against different kinds of data. This also included the popular BitTorrent program, which is responsible for some massive percentage of the amount of ones and zeros that come through the pipe. So those regulations said, if you're an ISP and one person has a BitTorrent machine running and another person's watching cat videos on YouTube and another person is doing navigation on their device, it doesn't matter. All those have to be treated equally. It was the first instance, though, Tim, of a government agency or government putting itself between the people and the ISPs. Previously, they were just governed by ordinary contract law. An ISP couldn't lie or steal from you, just like any company couldn't, but there were no special laws because of the fact that this was the Internet. So that net neutrality thing changed the nature of the relationship of how it was governed by making essentially it a utility service. Okay, it said,
right,
this is like a utility, and we now have
like
the
gas
right
or electric.
Sewer, gas, and electric, exactly.
Right.
And the reason why that's not an appropriate analogy for people like myself who think it's wrong is I cannot change my electric company like tomorrow. I don't even know if I have more than one option for electric. I know that I have a dozen options for an ISP, though. So if I don't like the terms of how my ISP is dealing with me, I can switch it. So that's what happened on Thursday when in a 3-2 vote, and the vote, by the way, to enact those net neutrality rules was a 3-2 partisan vote.
Right.
We saw a 3-2 partisan vote on Thursday to strike them down. The rules governing your relationship with your ISP are now the same as they were in January of 2015 and forever before that. That's all we've done. There were a lot of sort of hysterical notions about what would happen. And guess what? Your ISP might do horrible things, and you're going to have to go ahead and get a new one. That's you know, part of the big bad world we live in. But in any case, the government won't be involved. And in all things, Tim, I think that I would rather have, for good or ill, privately engaged people working it out, the marketplace, rather than the government, which, as we all know, does not often behave in ways that benefit consumers.
When the government gets involved, it begins a slippery slope.
The most scary sentence in the world. I'm from the government, and I'm here to help, right?
Thank you, Scott.
Thanks, Tim.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
I have a chance to say that to you again next week. Well, that is it, but a reminder that the podcast of this program, Liberty Nation Radio, and our own Liberty Nation podcast, The Uprising, are available to you at libertynation.com, where truth is making a comeback. Also available on fine podcast providers everywhere. So that's it for this week, and we'll be back at you next week. Same time, same station. Till then, this is Tim Donner saying stand up for liberty. And we'll see you next time on Liberty Nation.